103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville. It seems to be the case that everyone, at least from a religious perspective, largely relies on tradition to inform their impression of reality. And I can only see from the outside different people pointing at very different things with utmost confidence and using tradition to back that up. It makes me realize that perhaps tradition may not necessarily be the best way to reach that kind of conclusion. For something that should be the most important thing for me, whether or not this God exists, whether or not I'm actually getting like true information, whether or not these feelings that I have actually are coming from this belief, or if there's something I'm generating within myself. And that would be a great thing to unlock if I actually knew if that was true or not. And while I wouldn't discredit anything that you can get from the Episcopal Church, I really love it. I love the concepts, I love the sense of community. I do wonder if the grand conclusions that are coming about with regard to a supernatural deity are justified, and whether or not I'm justified in having them based on an idea of tradition. What do you think?
Welcome back. I'm Dotter Five. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, here in Knoxville, Tennessee.
And today we're talking with a guest. His name's Baby Seal. And what's interesting is he's one of the last people that I actually had a SE conversation with. I went up to Nashville, let's see, like last weekend, and set up at the park, and I got a phone call. It turned out to be a guy with the screen name Baby Seal. He wanted to talk about his church, why he believed in God, and some of the philosophies that he had. And I thought it was a really interesting conversation that we had. So I invited him to come onto this podcast/radio TV show. Not a TV show, just a radio show and a podcast. And have a chat. And we've been talking for, let's say, the last 30 minutes about a whole bunch of different things, including his church as an Episcopalian church, and his beliefs in Stoicism, a philosophy on how we should live towards what we value the most and not waste time on things we don't have control over. We also talked about stuff like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and a bunch of other cool things. But now we're going to really delve into his religion and why he believes it, which is always like the fascinating thing, right? Like the epistemology behind it. So join me and Doubter 5 as we delve into this guy's beliefs. But hey, let's see if we got any more announcements. Doubter 5, you got more announcements for us?
Since the school year is starting back, the Secular Student Alliance has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who might be like to be involved in the free thought movement, or who would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. We didn't actually mention it earlier.
No, but you
we
didn't.
We have Atheist Call-In TV Show.
What? We have an Atheist Caller TV show?
Have you ever seen it?
No, what's it called? What's it called?
It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or on Charter Channel 192. You can also watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where Fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and do a search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Okay, that's all for the announcements. Back to the show. Our today's topic is Stoicism.
With our friend Baby Seal. And yes. You know, like I said, it's not an interview. It is a conversation. I was telling him during the break, it's like, hey man, you're free to talk to us or ask us questions too. We don't want you to feel like you're under the spotlight.
Sure.
And we really appreciate this call.
I appreciate being here. Thank you very, very much for having me.
So we had talked about Mr. Rogers. That's a really, really fun show. I love that show. It's like one of the best PBS old school shows of all time. My opinion, it's one of the best. Then we went into Episcopal Church, Tenets of the Episcopal Church. And then I think we left into the break talking about reasons why we believe. And you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about, Baby Seal, you had wanted to talk about the things that you experience that justifies your high confidence in the God belief presented by the Episcopal Church. What do you mean?
I should clarify. I mean, I think that I joked with you on that last week. There's a joke that whatever you happen to believe, somebody in the Episcopal Church agrees with you. You know, including atheists, like they're actual, you know, atheists that attend church, you know, for the community aspect.
Sure, yeah,
at least
yeah.
in our church. Wow. And we welcome them, and we actually I did want to mention too that we have open communion, right? I mean, certainly other Christian churches believe that you have to be confirmed or, you know, believe certain things to actually come and partake in communion. And at our church anyway, we...
Dude, you're selling me the brochure. I love it.
No, I know.
It's great.
I know. We actually say, like, hey, what, you know, whatever you believe, you're welcome,
that's
you
great.
Know, to join us.
Sounds a lot like the Unitarian Church.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I think for me, the reason why I still go to the Episcopal Church versus the Unitarian Church, because, you know, in a lot of ways I agree the Unitarians are very similar in that way, is just the fact that I'm comfortable with the liturgy and the word.
Sure. So I just want to, and I just want to outline, yeah. You're free to go wherever you want. This is America. And you said Texas, so that's like prime America, right? And you can believe whatever you want. We're not here to tell you. What we're asking, though, is what's justifying the belief that you have that the God actually exists? And is it
no,
reliable?
Sure.
So what do you have?
So, harking back to our conversation, I was thinking a lot about, you know, how do you get comfortable that my feelings and experiences, you know, the spiritual experiences that I've had in my life around God and feeling, you know, cared for and loved, sort of in the, you know, universal kind of sense.
Yeah, the good feelings.
And so, you know, I looked into it and noticed, among other things, that, you know, belief in God in the U.S. anyway has gone from, I think, 99% in the 40s to around 90% today. You know, so it could continue to move, right? But I kind of feel like, okay, I'm interested in your take on how not that I'm confident in any particular set of beliefs around God, but the fact that God exists based on my feelings, based on the fact that at least 90% of Americans believe in God too. I'm interested in your take on that.
Well, let me ask you this, just as your personal opinion, why is it you think that all the different religion and all the different people who do believe in God can't agree on what he's like, or even if it's a he.
Well, no, exactly. I'm very much a fan of not using the he pronoun whenever possible, but I do wonder, and I think I also benefit from sort of interfaith. I belong to an interfaith group, and I really appreciate, like, hey, we as multi faiths can get together to do good works. We all agree, right, that we can help out people and volunteer. The volunteering is good. So I really appreciate the aspects of faith that are kind of more universal across the majority of faiths, to say, hey, maybe this is you know, aspects of God or reality that we can agree on, that you know, maybe those are the areas that maybe have something to say about reality, and at least inform me about how I view reality and God.
I'm not sure if I followed on that answer. So if there's a lot of different people in different churches, even on the same mm-hmm. block, and they all have
right.
very different ideas of what God is like, but are all
yes.
saying, well, we believe it because of faith and personal feelings. And the next group says, well, we believe in a completely different other God that we're sure is true because of our personal feelings and the faith that we have in him. And then another block on the other corner. You know, you come to Tennessee, it's literally every corner of the block.
Yeah, it is. Really.
right.
And it's
absolutely.
Like, hey, our personal feelings and our faith have pointed us to this complete other nature of God. And they're not compatible with each other. In fact, I think there are people that could have personal feelings and faith that there is no gods. So
it's from, interesting,
from
right?
That
certainly, like, when dogma doesn't agree, you know, those schisms, it's really kind of where, like, the, you know, well, certainly we experienced it in the Episcopal Church, right, around mm-hmm. Gene Robinson, when the gay bishop was elected, in I think it was the early 2000s, there was definitely a lot of tension between the group that thought, hey, we should be accepting of gay bishops and you know, they're allowed to elect a gay bishop if they want to, and the other side saying, you know, homosexuality is a sin,
yeah,
you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that's very much like where I think, you know, when you get into those like little nuanced things, that's where a lot of animosity builds up. But yeah. I think that at the same time, religions in general do have some common elements ritual, around, you know, loving each other, trying to be, you know, compassionate.
Yeah. Well, depends on which testament they come down on, I guess. I'm not familiar with the Episcopal, but I assume they still use the Bible.
Yes.
And yes. The Bible does not change. And well, who are saying that you know, gay men and women are okay and should be treated equally as regular, you know, citizens and all that, do not have a lot of biblical support where the people who are against it do. I mean, you can quote all kinds of things about love your neighbor and treat your neighbor as yourself, but when it comes right down to homosexuality, there are lines in the Bible that prohibit it.
Yeah, the clobber verses, sure.
Yeah.
That's what we call them.
How do you get around that in the church?
Well, I'll tell you how I get around it, and that is to say that I personally view the Bible as man's search for God and not, you know, God's, you know, literal word. Mm-hmm. And so just like I eat shellfish, you know, I wear mixed fabrics, yeah. Right? All those sorts of things. I also think that, you know, there were, you know, maybe reasons in the Old Testament where, you know, they thought that. I mean, hey, we also thought that, you know, imaginary play for children was wrong, you know, not so long ago, right? And that's, to get back to
and
Mr. Rogers.
People.
Right, and left-handed people, right? It's not that long ago that scientifically, and we had, you know, psychologists and whatever, and early child psychologists saying, imaginative play is bad. You know, you should only have reality, and you're crippling them by, you know, letting them pretend. And that turned out to not be the case. So I think, anyway, that's how I personally view it. And
can I throw something out?
If
the Bible just represents the search for God, why use the Bible at all? If the God that you believe in seems to be compatible with potentially being chaos or non-biblical at all,
or write your own.
Yeah, why do you need the Bible at all?
Well, I think that there's definitely a traditional aspect.
You specifically.
But me specifically, I think that I've accepted that human beings relate to things narratively.
So
right?
I'm just going to catch you here again. I'm not talking about human beings in general. I'm talking specifically about you. Why do you
use
the Bible?
But for me, I still, like, I'm a human being. I think narrative is very powerful. And I think that, you know, Jesus's parables are powerful. I think that, you know, as an example, the Adam and Eve story, as one that we were discussing before, I think gets to a fundamental problem that we as humans face, that we, you know, are biologically evolved to live in hunter-gatherer groups, right, in the Pleistocene era. And, you know, millions of years ago, or hundreds of thousands of years ago, when biologically we're identical, right, to those humans that were living in the Serengeti.
Yeah.
And that's not what we're living like right now. And that's kind of where, you know, we can't go back to the Garden of Eden, because, you know, I don't think we can choose to, go back to those hunter-gatherer groups.
Baby Seal.
Or I don't think people are willing to.
Just to get back to the crux of the question, it sounds like you have the Bible because you appreciate the narratives that are in that story. But how many other religious texts have you gone through? Because there may be ones that appeal to you even more so than the Bible.
No, definitely. I've read, and that's
and why
that's
not
really
use
where...
those as a, and abandon the Bible that you have? Because clearly there's more contemporary texts where you can get understandings
and more philosophical
of,
texts
where you
too.
Can get, if you like hunter and gatherers, there's plenty of actual books that have literacy and
articulate points about how hunter-gatherers became about, and you don't need the Bible to explain that. If you like Jesus's parables, there's many much more updated decrees for how laws are developed, how morality should work, how we should treat each other as a functional society, that are far more detailed and actually demonstrably successful than anything Jesus had said. Why do you need the Bible?
Well, and I think that those things should inform it, right? And certainly, you know, me reading books like you know, Ishmael I read a long time ago, so you know, don't try to quote me on it. Sapiens, right? And I think that's kind of where those things can inform those narratives for me. But I think that it's still a beneficial narrative. I still get something from those stories, even if it's informed, you know, by science and by those other readings. And so I guess the reason I don't abandon them is because I haven't come across, well, number one, you know, that's part of the community. That's part of me being able to discuss ideas with people to have that kind of shared narrative that we can then talk about and say, hey, maybe, you know, yeah, this parable is really meaningful, but what if we, you know, updated it or something? You know, what if our understanding can slightly change? I mean,
what if those parables have already been updated and we already have better text to go by? Why still use the old, outdated parables? Like, you can still have them in the church, you can still read them, you can still inform yourself with it. But it sounds like if I were to go to an Episcopal church, the main book that would be there is the Bible,
right?
And the main thing that you would be taught from is the Bible, when we seem to be in agreement that we have better stories that we can more information from.
I'm not sure that I completely agree with the better stories. I mean, what better stories do you know of on that is a better story than
I'll throw something out as
a narrative.
What if we knew for a fact that a parable in the Bible that we love very much is outdated, and we say, hey, I actually have a better way to explain why we have hunter-gatherer societies. I have a better way of understanding how we came about to learn how knowledge works and how we learned what, you know, how to treat each other as people and how we learn if snakes can actually talk or not and stuff like that. Hey, why don't we just use that text instead?
Yeah, well, and not only that, but I mean, there are Eastern religious texts, you know, Buddhism, Confucius,
sure,
that have better philosophical arguments.
Oh, yeah, you go
there
to Egyptian texts, you'll have the Ten Commandments
secular,
and more. Yeah.
Secular books that teach better morals, like all the works of Shakespeare and Ulysses and things like that.
I mean,
why does it have to be a religious text of the Jewish history to teach you the things that you deem are important?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm marathoning all the episodes
stories?
Of The Twilight Zone right now. Every episode has a great moral behind it, and it's acted so
well.
I
love The Twilight Zone.
I can tell you, I probably learned more from The Twilight Zone than I have from any chapter in the Bible recently,
yeah.
And I've read through that thing many, many times. But I'll tell you what, there are options. Far more so, like if you were to consider the concept of just one book decreeing how we should treat each other versus every other book, are we really that confident that the Bible is the best one that we should, you know, base everything off of?
Well, you know, I think I'm definitely not the best defender of the Bible that you could have on.
But you do
use it,
so I'm asking specifically for you. Why rely on it so much?
Well, for me, I don't rely on it I would say I don't rely on it that much. I do think that they are still some beautiful stories there that help me you know, approach and understand as we develop better thoughts and things like, you know, Twilight Zone. They're not mutually exclusive, and I think that the benefit for me personally, and the reason why I still find it meaningful, is to be able to have you know, conversations with people in my community and sort of have that shared narrative that we can then go off into other ideas. You know, like, I'm sure a lot of them are.
What if there was a better starting place to have that kind
of
conversation?
My stoic ideas.
I can't see you, so it's always this uncomfortable thing of interjecting. But what if there was a better book to use as a starting basis to have that conversation, rather than the book that was written, you know, like roughly 2,000 years ago? in different parts.
And the thing about it gets me, I have a problem with is when you share those stories and narratives, as it were, in your community.
Yeah.
It's not simply the ideas that you're exchanging and testing their worth. It comes with a whole load of authoritarianism with it. I mean, the societies that put forward those stories are basically telling you that these are true. You have to believe them and obey them. And the different people that you talk to in your community using those shared narratives are going to support the authoritarian part of it to different degrees.
Yeah.
And you never know how much they're going to be supporting it.
It sounds like you have a good mindset about this, but there are people who will take that far more literally than you and see you using it as a sign for them to be more confident in the authoritarian parts that they are already convinced are true.
And I think the issue there is authoritarianism, and that certainly isn't limited to, you know, religious groups. I think that's, you know, Stalin, for instance, wasn't religious.
Well,
so
he was
trained as
a religious person. He was trained
Sure. Sure, but the point to me is that I think, you know, certainly I, and I think a lot of people in my personal community would, you know, support the, hey, maybe we shouldn't support the authoritarian abuse of religious texts, you know.
I would throw something out.
Interestingly, like when you look at the history of the U.S., it was, you know, the Southern Baptists who were for separation of church and state because they were the minority religious group at the time.
Would you be in favor if the Episcopal Church says, actually, we're going to throw out the Bibles and get the Quran in here? It's the more updated Judaic text. We're going to learn from the Quran here from now on. And maybe even in the future, move over to the Bhagavad Gita or something like that. Would you be
or Mormonism?
Jewel
of Great Cause.
Oh man!
And there's nothing wrong with Mormonism. Girl. There's great stories in that book. In fact, there's more stories in that book than there are in the New Testament. If you like stories and seeing how people get along with each other, there's more of that in that book. So why not use that?
No, that is an interesting point. But I think that.
And why is that funny?
It's a good point in the sense of, you know, there are, obviously, you know, very strong families in the Mormon church.
You get the exact same stories you get from your New Testament. Those books haven't moved.
Sure.
Plus more stories of how people interact with each other and search for God. Why not use the Mormon text?
I think that gets, it gets to tradition. It gets to, I don't think that would necessarily happen, but I don't think that I don't know, that big of a problem with it if we were to change over the narrative.
Why wouldn't you be ecstatic?
To something else?
Now you have a book that has more stories plus the stories you already like. Why isn't that even better? Why not do it right now? Why is it funny? you gave me the standard. I'm just following the same standard.
Well, I think that having read some of those, I don't think that they're, you know, that much better than
why not?
That.
You already said you don't take it literally seriously. You say you just appreciate the stories and the concept of people searching for gods. You already said you had a separation between reality and what you participate as this imaginative play. Why not engage in, you know, Mormons or Jainism or Jehovah's Witnesses witness books? They have the same stories that are in the Bible that you're reading, plus more.
Or bring them all in.
Yeah. It seems that there could be potentially a double standard here. That's what I'd like to point out. And it's interesting why.
I think that the reason that it doesn't happen is because...
tradition, right?
Those traditions like happened organically, and that's where I think, in some ways, we work with what has been handed down to us, and that's where, you know, the Episcopal Church certainly updates, like, the prayer book, for instance.
And I certainly wonder if, as a means to getting to a true conclusion, just working only with what was handed down to you is a reliable way to get to a true conclusion. Or could there be something better to get to a true or a better understanding of reality, rather than just working what's given to you? It seems to be the case that everyone... And at least from a religious perspective, largely relies on tradition to inform their impression of reality. And I can only see from the outside different people pointing at very different things with utmost confidence and using tradition to back that up. It makes me realize that perhaps tradition may not necessarily be the best way to reach that kind of conclusion. For something that should be the most important thing for me, whether or not this God exists, whether or not I'm actually getting like true information, whether or not these feelings that I have actually are coming from this belief, or if there's something I'm generating within myself. And that would be a great thing to unlock if I actually knew if that was true or not. And while I wouldn't discredit anything that you can get from the Episcopal Church, I really love it. I love the concepts. I love the sense of community. I do wonder if the grand conclusions that are coming about with regard to a supernatural deity are justified, and whether or not I'm justified in having them based on an idea of tradition. What do you think?
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
What do you think?
I think that's sort of the aspect that's unknowable, you know, from my standpoint. And that's where I think...
if it's unknowable, you know, why be convinced that it's true?
Well, I'm not convinced that it's true. I think that I like the idea of God. I like that, you know, it matches with, you know, my personal experience and feelings, but I'm very open to the fact that, you know, maybe it is chaos. I can't know that, from the data that I have from a, you know, a reason standpoint. But similar to the way that, you know, I, you know, accept the calculated distance from the Earth to the Sun, but not doing the proof myself, you know, that's kind of where I think there's something for me, something meaningful for me, in, the ideas that other people have had in the past that I can approach, but not take too far, right? Yeah. In a dogmatic or ideological, way.
Larry, just as an update, we're near the bottom of the show. We'll close out and we'll edit this appropriately, but do you still want to do your, sign off just so that, we can get it in the same time frame?
I've got a different sign off this time.
All right, do a quick sign off.
Okay. One thing I wanted to say was that, you're talking about believing the distance to the sun. Well, believing the distance to the sun doesn't cost you anything. Religious beliefs can definitely cost you something. Look at the 9/11 pilots who flew their planes into the building. It cost them their lives. There's a lot of different things that come with religious belief, and they should be examined to see what kind of cost you'd be paying.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think that for me, that's where... I'm sorry. I didn't mean to screw up the sign-off. Sorry.
No. We can edit.
Great.
I can edit it. That's why I'm trying to get everyone on the same page. All right, go for it. Yeah. Go for it.
Great. So, okay, where was the... What was the thought? Oh yeah, no, I definitely think that that's an aspect of, again, kind of understanding, hey, are the ideas of God that I have, you know, beneficial to me and my community, as opposed to, yeah, creating a situation. And that's where, like, you know, ultimately the homosexuality causes break down for me, because my experience with my homosexual friends is that they don't have a choice, that they're loving,
right.
You know, there's nothing like bad that's happening here. We need to accept them as people and as members of our church,
hey,
and as full members of the church.
Sure.
And that's really where, yeah.
Can I throw something in? Just throwing my hat in here. Like, if someone told me, if I told someone, hey, or someone told me, hey, I have a cat, and I'm like, oh, cool, and they show me a picture of the cat, I believe that they have a cat, because that's a pretty mundane thing to believe. People have cats, and that's good enough evidence for me to believe that they have a cat. If they told me they had an actual tiger, like an actual Bengal tiger, I'm like, I'm going to have to see a picture or something to, like, I won't take your word for it. And they show me a picture of them with the tiger, I'll be like, oh, man, I don't know about this. I guess I believe, but not really. I'd have to see like a bunch of pictures and maybe a Facebook account, maybe like some sort of like scar on their body from them training it. If they told me they had like a purple dragon that came from Jupiter in a time machine and they had a picture of them standing next to like a DeLorean and there's like a purple dragon behind them, I'm like, I don't care if you have a picture of it. I don't believe you. That thing is too extraordinary for me to believe with the amount of evidence that you're providing. Right. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and I can't imagine anything more extraordinary than a supernatural deity that made the entire universe. As a result, if people say, hey, you know, you believe it because 100 people said it, or you believe it because scientists said, you know, the sun exists and light takes time to travel to the earth, I was like, okay, these are mundane things that we can test and examine. But in a supernatural deity, that's an incredibly extraordinary thing. I'm going to need more than just a book saying that it's
especially
true.
Especially one that monitors every thought you have, but, and really cares where you put your penis.
Larry, just finishing the thought. Just finishing the thought. I won't believe it just because a book says so. I won't believe it because, you know, everybody on the planet says so. I'm going to need more evidence to believe this extraordinary thing. The standards of evidence are different based on how incredible the thing that I'm being told is. It seems to be that case. Do you agree that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence?
I do agree with that. I think that, again, you know, a good skeptic or a good postmodernist could say, like, you know, it can tear down anything, right? Any kind of rational argument that you have. I mean, as long as you don't accept prepositions, you can deal with it all, right? But ultimately, it all gets down to, you know, and even science gets down to feelings. So
why does it get down to feelings? And is feelings a reliable way to get to a true conclusion? I tell you, I've been at work. I've worked the night shift once. I walked to my car, and I thought there was a dog rolling around the corner. I saw the dog. I literally saw the dog, and he was rolling towards me. And I'm freaking out. I have every hormone in my body firing because I'm like, I don't want to fight dogs, dude. I'm a big black guy, but like, I'm not bulletproof. I'm not dogproof. I can get bitten, and I bleed too, you know? And it turned out just to be a plastic bag. It rolled right past me, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. I had every feeling in the world that this was a real dog coming after me, and I was wrong.
Right.
That's a real story. Our personal feelings
aren't facts.
Yeah, our personal feelings a reliable way to get to a true conclusion? If I could be wrong about a dog in a plastic bag, why am I relying on feelings to get me on that God claim? Why was that even useful?
Right, and how do you interpret those feelings? How can you be sure that your interpretation is correct?
Yeah, how do you know your feelings are the same as anyone else's? Like, why is that a reliable way to get to a true conclusion?
Well,
I can get to conclusions, but why true ones?
To me, the reliable piece of it is, what are the aspects of God that a majority of religion and the majority of people agree with? You know, God is good, right? God is, you know, potentially inside the universe, is imminent, possibly outside, you know, that's where, I don't know. I don't know what
not
argument,
to,
but
yeah,
I,
yes, not to frustrate you, but this is only the current understanding of what the popular idea of God is. You go back 1,000 years, it's completely different. You go back another 1,000, it's completely different. 1,000 years from now, we might believe in a completely different God than we are now. If that changes on the majority, why are we relying on the majority to determine whether or not the aspects of the God that we believe to be true are true? If that can change based on whoever's around or whoever has the most babies.
there is a great, I had a sociology professor who started his college career as a religion major, and his first sociology class, you know, said, okay, you can predict what kind of religion a society has based on, you know, these factors, right? Of whatever, how developed and what stage of development that they're in terms of, like, is it an animistic religion versus, you know, possibly polytheistic versus monotheistic, and so on. And so that's why he changed his major from religion to sociology. I definitely think that's part of it, right? But that's where, for me, living in the society that we live in, and I have, like, you know, by the way, gone to mosques, I've gone to Buddhist temples.
I'm not challenging you. I'm just asking, why are you relying on feelings to reach a true conclusion? That's the focus of this question. If we can agree that personal feelings aren't reliable, that I can have very strong personal feelings about certain things that aren't true, like, you know, about people with, about genres of music or people with certain colored skins or whether or not someone has a penis or not. If I could have feelings about those strong things and they dictate how I act, are those a reliable way to know if that's a true conclusion or not? Like, I can't tell you how many women I've seen drive Jeep Wranglers in the city. It makes me think, Jeeps are just chick cars. They're like things that daddies buy for their good daughters so that they never get in car accidents that they have to worry about. And like, women like big cars, so they're always going to be, whenever I see a Jeep, it's always going to be a woman. I've seen that time and time again. Therefore, in my mind, from the personal feelings that I've reached and the evidence that I've had and the experiences I've had, every Jeep Wrangler is driven by a woman. Like, that's a conclusion I can reach with the evidence that I've had. Is that a reliable way to get to that conclusion?
Well, I think that, interestingly, I mean, this is where, what is the crisis right now striking kind of social sciences of being able to reproduce, published results, in papers, that's actually kind of disturbing. What is that? The replication crisis. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
So this is a pretty recent thing where a lot of published like psychology papers.
Does this go towards answering the question that I asked? Because I had a question hanging out there I genuinely wanted an answer to.
Okay. Well, you said, yeah, your feelings can be mistaken for sure. I would say that feelings that you have over time, can be more reliable. I mean, I don't question, am I mistaken about drinking my tap water?
No doubt. You have a reasonable expectation based on a grand majority of mundane experiences with your tap water that it's not dangerous. I don't know if you have as many with a supernatural being. And I'm wondering why use a standard for mundane tap water for an incredibly extraordinary supernatural being? Why are these two things being used for the same kind of conclusion? It seems like they're completely different standards testing.
But that's where I feel like I'm not, and this is my feeling, right? Mm-hmm. But my feeling is that I'm not making an extraordinary claim to say that reality outside myself exists, that I don't know, the all the aspects of reality outside of myself. Part of, you know, the idea that helps me to capture the wonder that you were describing, that, you know, I'm very much, find like Carl Sagan, Carl Sagan's view, Spinoza's, you know, writings on God.
Before
Einstein
we get to more names,
well,
do you believe
Einstein's
that a God,
God
exists?
Again, I think that is it's a meaningful concept to me. Hmm. And
But do you actually believe that God exists?
No.
I believe that God exists. Hmm.
That's what we're talking about here. That's just what we're talking about. So I want to know, do you have a good reason for that belief?
I think that, it's in a lot of ways separate from the knowable universe, and in that sense it's outside the ways of proving, and that's why I try to keep myself and those beliefs as small as possible and as humble as possible,
so
in terms of like
the God belief is dependent on three, at least as far as you presented, that you exist in a knowable universe, that there's a universe beyond that, that we don't know anything about it, and that God lives there.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay,
I think that it's possible that God is, you know, the universe, like a pantheistic, you know, view. It's possible that it's a deist view. I don't know. The aspects of God that I feel most comfortable with is that, there's a very rational aspect to God, that, you know, the world is ordered, that it follows certain laws.
But how do we know that's related to a God? Like, I can definitely flip a coin and it can land heads, and I can say my cat's black, but I can't make the argument of saying, well, because I flipped this coin and it landed heads, I have a black cat. Like, how am I connecting the fact that I have a rational universe that seems orderly and a god existing? How are you connecting those two things?
Well, because I'm connecting God to reality, and that's like a way of
Tell me the reasonable way that you're doing that in a reliable method, so that I can believe it too if it's true. Because I want to know a few things. Like, how are you? How are you doing that?
Because relationship with reality.
Like, I could say the same thing about Shiva, or I can say the same thing about my camera on my desk right now. Like, this camera exists, therefore there's rationality in the universe and math exists. Yes, my camera does exist and math does exist, but how am I connecting those two? It seems so desperate. Like, how am I really, what's the methodology that I'm using that you can tell me, or you can tell me, that connects, hey, we seem to be living in an orderly world, and a God exists that's responsible for that. Like, what's that connection that's there? And is that connection reliable? Like, do you have that? You don't have to have it right now. We can talk about this in the future. But do you have that? Do you have a reliable way that connects the reality that we seem to be sharing and a supernatural deity that is likely responsible for it? And if you do, I want to know about it, because that seems incredible. But I'm hearing things that are personal experiences.
I think when you say supernatural God, and I guess my belief in God doesn't say that it necessarily has to be supernatural, and maybe there is no.
So if your God's natural, can we test it?
No, I think it's something that
idea where your God exists? It seems like the definition of the God that we're talking about shifts as we get close to it.
Yeah.
Like when I say, hey, can we test God? Right. No, the God, it could be chaos. It could be ethereal outside of this reality. It's like, okay, well, it's supernatural then. No. It exists in this world and potentially interacts with things. So it does do things that we know about. No. There's no way to know if it exists or not. We need to know what we're talking about here, because this isn't the first time that we've ran into this loop. I'm only telling you this from an outside perspective. I don't have a horse in the race. I'm telling you, I don't believe that there's no God. I don't believe that there is a God. I'm not convinced either way. So I'm probably the best, Larry and I are probably the best unbiased parties to tell you that we're not convinced that you have a very good understanding of this God that you're talking about.
I don't have very strong beliefs on, what God is. I have ideas.
Yet
right?
You are willing to defend on multiple hours at a time that this God actually does exist and that your belief is founded and reliable and justified. Why bother?
Because I enjoy thinking about it.
I know you do. I do. You do.
Examining
no doubt.
It.
It feels great.
I think it should be examined, and it should be, something that I think about.
But why do it from the perspective of, hey, this thing makes me feel good, therefore it's real, and now we can have fun thinking about it, versus why do I believe this thing is real? Do I have a good reason to believe it? I'm going to withhold belief until I have a good reason to believe in it. And then you can be like anybody else in a much more rational perspective of saying, hey, I don't know if this is true or not. I don't actually believe it, but I do like learning more about the history of how it came to be. That way I can see it from an unbiased perspective. Because I can tell you, I played Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It's all about Greek, and you're running around in a simulation of Greece. I love all the gods. I love interacting with vendors and pirates and figures from ancient Greece and from the Peloponnese War. It's amazing, and I can appreciate it. Despite the fact that I don't have any belief in those gods, or I'm convinced that any of them were true, you don't have to have that belief that you're willing to defend at this point to appreciate the benefits of the belief, or even experience the same things that you're already experiencing. And I'm wondering what is more important to you, the fact that you can have these good, comfortable beliefs that you can appreciate looking into, or the rationality of understanding, hey, I'm willing to have a high standard for what I believe is true. And if, in fact, this isn't true, or if it is true, I'll say I don't know for now, but I can still examine it and still have these really great conversations, but not from the perspective of I already am on team, this God exists. Like, there's no reason to send out your your colors already. Like, you can, if you don't have a good reason to believe it, I don't know is one of the best answers that you could have. And is in the intellectually honest position, and there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I don't know if this God exists. I don't believe in this God. I'm not convinced that it's true, but I can still appreciate the community that I'm part of. I can still contribute and have the meetings or whatever in the interfaith groups. I think you're in the perfect place for it. But if you don't have a good reason for it, I wouldn't waste a single second saying, well, maybe I do. What about personal feelings? What about if 100 people said that the God was true? What if it was just from tradition? What if I had like these really, really interesting feelings that I don't know where they came from, or if it makes me feel bad about relics? Like, no, you would immediately recognize these are bad, unreliable ways to get to true conclusions. And I care about what's true and what's not true. So why not just, I'm not forcing you to do anything, but I'm wondering, like, why isn't that as obvious to you as it is from us who are on the outside saying, hey, what are you doing right now? You have a great mind. Why are you convincing yourself that something's true when you have no good reason to believe it?
I've got a great video I'd like to recommend to people if you're interested. Go to YouTube if you're at a computer. I assume you are.
I'm at a computer.
Yes.
Look up Evidence 3, EVID 3, NC 3. Do you see, he's got a series of videos called Why I'm No Longer a Christian.
I'm sorry, what was the
name? It's Evidence, but spell the second and third E with a 3.
Oh, got it.
Also, check out Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It's really good.
Now, he's got a series of videos. I think the first 10 of them really are the series. Each one's about 10 minutes long, where he very painstakingly documents his journey from Christian fundamentalist to atheist. And it takes him through college, and he has a mentor that he emails back and forth. And he talks about every aspect of belief. And he's very eloquent, and his production values are great.
Yeah.
It's a very good series of videos, and you can break them up into 10-minute segments if you want to.
Also, if you like videos, I'd recommend check out other street epistemologists. There's Anthony Magabosco, Cordial Curiosity. You'll see mold when it may not be as clear right now, but like the more you see people use the same reasons that you're using to believe completely other different things, makes you realize, oh, okay, maybe I should get better reasons, because you should always be towards the pursuit of getting better reasons for what you believe.
Right.
And when you realize, oh, here's the standard, and all these people believe completely different other gods, or completely like UFOs abducting them, or that crystals can talk to them, or that their grandparents are reincarnated birds and cardinals and parks, and they believe the exact same reasons why I believe in my God, I need to have a higher standard for what I believe. And it's like we said at the beginning of the show, you can't choose what you believe. You're either convinced or you're not convinced. And you'll either find that you're convinced with the current standard you have, or that you're not convinced with the standard you have. But either way, you can keep looking. And I feel like I don't want you to ever be in the point where you're like so comfortable with your with the feeling that you have that you stop looking. So
no, I absolutely agree with that. I definitely, you know, one experience that I had that was very cool, like early on in Stoicism, is thinking through like free will and determinism, and came to some really, I don't know, interesting insights there that were very challenging. And no, I appreciate, you know, the conversation. I guess my question for both of you is what would you like say that your philosophy of life is in terms of, you know, the why of life, and how you both kind of got there?
You mean where did life come from, type of thing?
No, like more personal, of like, you know, what
the purpose
do you,
of life?
Yeah, what's your, I guess, purpose of life, or what your goal is?
Well,
or
like
how
motivates
you
us?
There.
Purpose is one, or self-given. Yeah. You develop them in yourself. It's very important. Some of the most important thing you can do in your life is develop your purpose. And you don't just have one, you have many. And they change throughout your entire life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a simple question. It's not saying, well, this is my purpose, because, you know, they're evolving.
So I'd say one of the truest things about a secular perspective is that I'm not given purpose by a greater being to me. I get the responsibility to choose those for myself, and I can change them if I need to, and I can evolve them as I evolve and grow up myself. And I think that's a wonderful responsibility, such that my purpose is now
absolutely
finding purpose and giving myself purposes and learning from the purposes that I have.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're interested in some of my writings, you can go to digitalfreethought.com and click on the blog button. I've taken those articles and put them in a book, and it's not available on Amazon. Called Atheism, What's It All About? but anybody can go to my website and read those articles and more. And our shows are archived there too, as well.
No, awesome.
Yeah.
No, so as an example, Ty, like I think, you know, from our earlier conversation, I mean, would you position yourself as kind of like an enlightened hedonist, you know, kind of like the individual is kind of the highest good, in other words?
No, I don't. So is that like a utilitarian perspective? Are you familiar with that term?
Yes.
So
I'm familiar with that, but utilitarian, I mean, you typically they're more like
whatever's the highest pleasure is good.
Looking at the humanity as like the whatever unit of measures.
Okay.
Sort of thing.
So I'm not up to date with like the details of these understandings. I would say like I don't know what a hedonism is either. I think my philosophy for at least how I conduct myself is fairly straightforward. I'm willing to say I don't know when I don't know things, and I'm open-minded to learning new things, and I'm trying to have the highest stamp. I want to believe as many true things as possible, but I also don't want to believe the fewest false things as possible. So I need to have a very good standard so that I know where the falsehoods are and where the truths are. And I'm willing to say I don't know if I don't know. That way I can at least put myself in the perspective where I'm at least intellectually honest. Beyond that, it's easy enough to do things that maintain my well-being. And that just requires me understanding long-term benefits versus like short-term gains. Like, hey, I can steal that money from that bank today, but I might get arrested and put in a box for the rest of my life afterwards. I'm not going to do that. So, hey, I'm going to do things that are towards my well-being. I'm going to pay my taxes. I'm going to contribute to society. I'll be a good moral model for people who can look up to me, maybe even follow my path or set a good example for the neighborhood that I'm in. And these have been demonstrably beneficial to me. And I like having things that are beneficial for me. So, like, I call that selfishness, but there's nothing really wrong with looking out toward for my own self-preservation and self-interest.
And
my fellow man, because that benefits me, because now my fellow man's looking out for me as well. So it all leads towards, hey, what's beneficial, and this all benefits me.
It's called humanism.
In a sense, it's humanism in a nutshell, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely. And that's, again, not to drop whatever, Stoic terms or whatever, but that's very much the eudaimonia, the like good flow of life, beneficial sort of thing, sort of view. And there are just some very interesting arguments between like the Stoics and the Epicureans, right? Historically of like the Epicureans were just all about pleasure and like you just isolate yourself and a garden, a nice peaceful garden somewhere, and that's the highest good, and that's the most beneficial thing. Whereas the Stoics would say, no, the best thing is for you to like live a life of service, and that not only benefits society but also ultimately you, and that sort of like, you know, like a Mr. Rogers would be a great example of sort of that, a life well-lived.
If that's it, then I would disagree with that point of view, because I would say I shouldn't be obligated to have to provide service. I would say, hey,
it's not an obligation, though, but I think it's a way of maybe recognizing that in benefiting others, you're benefiting yourself.
Yeah,
through benefiting others.
My idea is whatever you do that causes the least amount of needless harm is the best thing. And if there's a guy who's like, I just want to have a beach where I'm sitting and not hurting anybody for the rest of my life, I'm like, okay, cool. That's not a problem. And if there's a guy who's like, I want to join the military and help, and I want to do community service, I'm like, they're both doing what they want to do with their own lives.
Sure.
Neither of them are causing needless harm. I'm fine with it. I'm not going to force one to do the other or the other to do the alternative. I think they're both rocking it. But if there's some guy who's just kicking puppies for no good reason,
you
need to stop. Either be like this guy or this other guy, but we're going to stop you if you do needless harm. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, do what you want. My three rules are like, just don't be a jerk. You know, work hard, like, you know, enjoy the life that you have, and then try to keep your opinions to yourself, which I'm still working on.
Right. Well, guys, I'm going to bail. You guys keep talking if you want to.
All right.
Ryan, I wanted to say thank you very much for being on the show, and you're welcome anytime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. I appreciate
happy
it.
To have you. And Ty, thanks again.
All right, later.
As usual, appreciate you. See you guys later.
Can I do a quick survey with you, Ryan, before you head out?
Sure.
All right. So you had done that interview with me. I never get the idea or the perspective of someone after the talk that we've had. You said you had given it a lot of thought.
Yeah.
Was there anything that you would prefer to express during the call, or was there anything that you thought I could improve on with regard to how the conversation went, et cetera?
That's a really good question. I think the main thing that bothered me is, you know, just like cell phones have that delay, right?
Oh, I didn't know about that. Okay.
So, and I don't know if you kind of experience it on the Facebook thing as well. Like, I don't know if you've ever had the experience of like being on a conference call, and then you walk into the room and they like say something and you hear it like 2 seconds later in ear before you hang up.
Yeah.
But you know, that like, that's very like whatever, a technical aspect, but I think I would say if you like do it in the future, I have an Android phone, so I don't know how it works, but like FaceTime or Skype or something where you can see like facial expressions,
yeah.
I think is also always like a good thing, and I think that that's where, you know, it's very helpful to have like deep conversations like this face to face, and that's
sure.
That's kind of what
I also have an unlimited data plan, so it's not outside of the ordinary, though I wonder what would happen to it if I did an hour long face video call. But it's worth a shot.
You would probably be throttled. Like,
yeah,
that would be
I think
guess.
So. I think I'd be throttled. I was like, why are you so grainy? Why is everything so grainy?
But in terms of everything else, no, I thought it went really well, and it's definitely given me a lot to think about.
Is there any answer you would give differently now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what you said there towards the end was very compelling, around saying, hey, these are meaningful, but the I don't know is maybe the right answer. And I'm sort of surprised by my reticence to, you know, leap there.
Hmm.
And so I think that's where I just have to do a little bit more work around, all right, yeah, is there something else there, or can I, you know, get to that point and feel better about things?
Do you already know about the coin flip example? Did I already show that with you?
Yeah, and I guess so just to go down that road, as well as the example that you used about a car and putting water versus gas in the tank.
Yeah.
So that's where I kind of feel like I, feel like I've been testing that out in the sense of, does belief in God like actually get my car to where I want it to go in terms of helping me be a better person, right?
Right.
And so, I kind of feel like that's the case. I don't think you necessarily have to have a belief in God for, you know, to get the gas in the tank, or
theoretically,
you know, it can be another source. Theoretically, right? In this example, but,
yeah. And this is entirely hypothetical.
That's what's worked for me.
But this is entirely hypothetical. If you stopped your belief in God right now, I'm not saying do it, but like if you what would change tomorrow about your personality?
Not that much, to be honest.
Hmm.
I mean, that's kind of where.
Like, would you go around start murdering people, or would you start wearing clothes
no,
with multiple
exactly,
fabrics and
exactly.
the color purple, and like shoving shellfish down your face and being like, "I'm gonna lust after every one of my neighbors."
Right.
Any, whatever.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You think anything like that would happen?
No. I, and that's where I think you know, as we kind of ended the previous conversation, I don't think it's that, I don't know. Yeah, does it really change anything? And so in that sense, is it really the gas in the tank?
To make editing really easy for me, how about we'll continue this offline. I'll also record it. But at least for now, we'll see you guys next time. Thank you very much for joining us on the radio, Digital Free Thought Radio. This is 103.9 FM. Wozo, we'll see you next week. All right.
Bye. See you.
I have something to think about.
WOZOLP 103.9 FM, Knoxville.